Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much. We would like to see you, Commissioner Sibanyoni. Can you open your video?
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Sibanyoni. Members, before we proceed with the interview, I would like to put on record that I do know Commissioner Sibanyoni from 2004 to 2009. We both served in the same Committee of Justice and Constitutional Development, as it was known then. That is the extent of my knowledge and working with him as colleagues in the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Constitutional Development. Can I also note other people who would want to make a declaration?
Yes, Chair. Steve Swart.
Honorable Swart.
Chair, thank you. I also served with Commissioner Sibanyoni in previous parliamentary terms, and I just wanted to declare that as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other member? Honorable Mpuke?
Chairperson, I know Mr. Sibanyoni just from Pretoria, but I never worked with him. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, and welcome, Honorable Commissioner Sibanyoni.
Apologies, Chair. Honorable Nyoa Drukin has a hand raised.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Honourable Drachens.
Thank you very much, Chair. Commissioner was during my term in Parliament, as we served together in the same term in Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Sibanyoni, for availing yourself to be interviewed for the position of a full-time commissioner. You are currently a part-time commissioner in the South African Human Rights Commission. Because we have not yet received a feedback on the fingerprints and the screening, we would like to ask you whether do you have any criminal records and whether have you ever been declared to be insolvent by any court of law?
Chairperson, I've got no criminal record, and I've also have never been declared insolvent. I must hesitate to apologize to say when I was completing the vetting form, I forgot to also go for taking fingerprints at the nearest police station. But if needs be, I can still go today and have my fingerprints taken and submit to them.
That would be highly appreciated, Mr. Sibanyoni. And my second question is, hypothetically, imagine that you are appointed as a commissioner. How would you convince us that you are able to step into the role? In doing so, please tell us about who you are, your values, and your experience. So in short, tell us about yourself and your suitability for the position.
Thank you, Chairperson. At the present moment, I'm a part-time commissioner since with effect from the 3rd of January 2017 or 2017. And by that time, when I was interviewed, I was asked whether I was available for part-time or for full-time. My preference was for full-time, but the Portfolio Committee by that time decided to appoint me as a part-time commissioner. I want to say I respect the decision of the Portfolio Committee by that time. And then I started then working as a part-time commissioner on the 3rd of January 2017. And at that time, I was also manning an office of a law firm in Nelspruit in Bombela in the Mpumalanga province. But now the landscape has changed. I'm no longer part of that law firm in Mbombela. And as a result, as the time passed on, the work or the amount of work at the Human Rights Commission increased tremendously, and it increased remarkably. At the Human Rights Commission, we've got what we call annual performance plans, the APPs. My portfolio committee is land, farming communities or right to food, as well as environment. It is quite a wide portfolio or a focus area. But currently, I'm also taking care of the focus area, which resulted as the coming to an end of the term of Commissioner Advocate Mohamed Amir Mia since the 2nd of February. And I have been working as a human rights activist even before I came before the South African Human Rights Commission, because my practice as a sole practitioner was situated in the Bronkhorstspruit, and then I had received cases which were from the farming communities. And then with effect from the dawn of the democracy, we had some of the people who were victims of being evicted, if not evicted, constructive eviction. What do I mean by constructive eviction? The life on those farms was made so unbearable to the farm workers to such an extent that the other decided to leave and then go and stay in informal settlements and the like. By that time, although I was the sole practitioner, I had an unsurmountable amount of work that I even shared with institutions like the Legal Resources Center in Pretoria, as well as the Lawyers for Human Rights. But then thereafter, after my detention and the like, there was a short period. And then when I came back, I worked as a PA in a law firm in Pretoria, and thereafter as a director of the law clinic at Vista University in Mamelodi campus. And then thereafter, I was at the TRC, having been seconded by the an organization called National Institution of Public Interest Law and Research. The acronym is NIPILA. I was the coordinator of a network of advice offices throughout the country, except in KZN, because in KZN, Professor Marquit Mason was having advice centers, but in all other 8 provinces, I was the person who was coordinating advice centers. What do I mean by coordinating advice centers? We were using paralegals who were giving advice, and when they had complex matters, they will make appointments that I will go around and go and solve those problems. Now, throughout my life, I have been championing human rights, and then at the moment, I am also doing that, although being a part-time commissioner, but the amount of the work that I'm doing is as much as a work of a full-time commissioner. And that is why when I was nominated for possible appointment as a full-time commissioner, I said, so be it. Our time is kept to 150 hours per month, but visually I'm working more than that, because apart from physically attending at the offices of the Human Rights Commission, of the commission, I also received some requests for interviews through community radio stations, national radio stations, television stations, and so on. I want to be brief, Chairperson, unless there are specific questions. But if the portfolio committee sees as well to recommend me for full-time appointment, that will give me a leeway to make a contribution, to continue make a contribution that I am presently making. Thank you, Commission, I mean, Chairperson, and fellow members of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much. I will now open for other members to ask questions. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Commissioner. It's good to see you again.
After many years,
I trust you are well and your family as well. Just as the outset, and you have been a part-time commissioner, could you give us your understanding of the commission's constitutional duty and the key statutory mandates, powers and functions, just briefly, because I do have limited time?
Very, very briefly, our Chapter 9 institution, the Human Rights Commission, we are given powers by the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa Act number 108 of 1996, as well as the enabling legislation, the South African Human Rights Commission Act number 40 of 2013. And then we also utilize the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. And our mandate, as it is stated in this legislation that I have quoted, is to promote the respect for human rights and human culture in South Africa. Also to promote the protection, the development and attainment of human rights. And also to monitor and assess the observance of human rights in South Africa. Important mandate, because the Constitution says the Human Rights Commission must, in other words, it is peremptory that we have to do or to do this mandate. Therefore, maybe in brief, our mandate is to transform the society, to secure the rights, and to restore dignity of the South African people.
And thank you very much. What is your understanding of the powers that the Human Rights Commission has got to fulfill that mandate?
The Human Rights Commission has got powers in the sense that following the legislation, it will receive complaints from members of the public. But the Act also says the Human Rights Commission, on its own initiative, it can investigate and come up with the findings and thereafter make recommendations.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, we know the Human Rights Commission is facing many challenges in fulfilling its mandate. Can you, being a part-time commissioner, share some of those challenges and how you would mitigate those challenges and use strategies should you be appointed a full-time commissioner?
First of all, those challenges are that I think when the Human Rights Commission was established, and when it was set, it should consist of six commissioners and six full-time commissioners and two part-time commissioners. The lawgiver didn't have an idea what amount of the work the Human Rights Commission will be facing. But now, as the passage of time, there is a lot of work that the South African Human Rights Commission is making. And then also, apart from what I have said, as the Human Rights Commission, we've got a mandate or the power to educate. We've got what is called outreach programs. We have been conducting those outreach programs, calling people to the community halls, where there are community halls, or to halls situated at schools, or even to churches, and when there are no services. But with the advent of COVID-19, we have resorted to utilizing more so visual communication with the members of the public so as to reach the message through the length and breadth of the country. And I must also thank the media houses because through their inviting us to utilize their slots or their programs, that is in a way that where we communicate with the vulnerable and the marginalized peoples through speaking through the community radios, more especially, as well as the national radio stations and the televisions. And we have seen as time goes on and on, the amount of the complaints that we are receiving as the Human Rights Commission talks to the effect that there is a big role that the Human Rights Commission has played.
Thank you, Commissioner. Can you give us an idea of the how you would deal with the budgetary constraints that are facing the Human Rights Commission? Firstly, secondly, Section 184.3 of the Constitution indicates that the Human Rights Commission must require relevant organs of state to provide the Commission with information on the measures they have taken towards the realization of rights. That's annually. Rights to hygiene, healthcare, food, water, and social security. How will you ensure that the relevant organs of state, do they at the moment give it, or how will you ensure that they do going forward? So it's the budgetary and this issue of annual reports, which previously human rights commissions have complained they don't get them. Thank you. That will be my last question. Thank you.
I will start with the budgetary constraints. Our budgets are constrained very briefly, and then we have pleaded with the National Treasury not to cut our budget. But the National Treasury has indicated that across the board, in view of the COVID-19, the budget has been cut, and then ours has also been cut. And then moving forward, I must say that we have even thought or considered of whether or not it will be opportune to fundraise, but we have been careful to say donor funding or funds, most of the time they've got strings and the like. And then we have decided that we will operate with the minimum budget that the National Treasury makes available to us. And then also to say that we will also take into the consideration that we are moving in difficult times in view of the period of COVID-19.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Sibanyoni, and thank you to Honorable Swart, Honorable Mofokeng. You have 8 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to Commissioner Sibanyoni. Commissioner Sibanyoni, I'm aware that you're already serving in the Commission. I just want to check on the Human Rights Month. As we know that it's celebrated, what can be done by the South African human rights to combat scourge such as racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia and related intolerances, as well as gender-based violence and femicide, which are undermining South Africa's human rights culture? Can you maybe elaborate on that and tell us what is it that is happening now? Are you doing something about it?
Thank you very much for asking that question. As the South African Human Rights Commission, I am the chairperson of the events subcommittee. And during this month of March, being the Human Rights Month, we have called upon all our provincial offices in the 9 provinces to come up with the action. They have given us a plan, and that plan talks to those rights that are affecting people through the length and breadth of our country. And insofar as gender-based violence, we have indicated that those are some of the challenges that are taking place currently, and that the provinces, in other words, the offices of our 9 provinces should include those, as well as the rights of people with disability And we are also looking at holding a conference from the 29th to the 31st of March, where we are going to be dealing with corruption. And then because as the South African Human Rights Commission, we are saying as the custodian of human rights, we should have a bigger role to play. We need to have our voice heard. And then also, as the South African Human Rights Commission, we should observe this month to the fullest, and more especially this month, the theme being the year of Charlotte Maxeke, and promoting and protecting human rights in the period of COVID-19.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Can I also check on the issue of the South African Human Rights Commission in terms of your relationship with the Chapter 9 bodies?
Thank you very much.
Sorry, do you think that the public understands the role of the Chapter 9 institutions?
Thank you very much for asking that question. We are constantly educating the community, because sometimes we will receive a complaint, and then when you look at the complaint, you find that it will be better suited to be handled by the public protector or by the Commission for Gender Equality or by the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities. And then we refer those complaints to those relevant Chapter 9 institutions, our sister institutions. But what is of more significance is that as the South African Human Rights Commission, we have concluded a memorandum of understanding with the Commission for Gender Equality. That MEO or the MOU that we have signed to those instances where we feel that we can join hands in handling those challenges and the like. But I must also mention that as the Human Rights Commission, we are the only Chapter 9 institution that has been given powers to take matters to court, in other ways to litigate. So we've got a good relationship with the other Chapter 9 institutions, because if there are some instances that are due to be taken to court, those instances or those occurrences are referred to the South African Human Rights Commission.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. I want to also check on the role of Parliament with the South African Human Rights Commission. What do you think is the support? Do you have enough support as the commissioner or as the institution from Parliament?
The Constitution of the Republic of South Africa says the organs of state should assist the Chapter 9 institution.
Mrs. Banyan, minutes.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes. But I must emphasize that we've got a problem of non-responsiveness from some of the organs of state. We write reports and then our reports are not attended to. But I must thank outright the Department of Human Settlement, Water and Sanitation, when we issued our Vaal River report, immediately within 2 days, the Minister of Human Settlement, Water and Sanitation made a public statement to say that they will implement or take some of the operations in the wastewater plant. And then also the provincial Gauteng of Gauteng, when the Premier was delivering the State of the Province address, the SOPA, he said, I quote, he welcomes the report by the Human Rights Commission. And then we applauded that to say we are happy when we are making our annual reports that those reports are not ignored, but are considered by the organs of state. Chapter, 184, subsection 3, says every year the Human Rights Commission must call upon organs of state to provide the Human Rights Commission with the information as to what measures have they taken to have those rights gradually realized. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nigel Drachens.
Good morning, Commissioner. I hope you are well. I have three questions for you today. In your view, what are the critical human rights issues that are facing South Africa right now?
The critical issues that are facing South Africa at the present moment are other questions of the problem of unreliable or corruption and the like. I think it's a great thing that is facing South Africa, and also the lacks in changing the landscape. Because when you look at the preamble of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa says, we therefore, through our freely elected representatives, adopt this constitution as the supreme law of the Republic so as to heal the divisions of the past and establish a society based on democratic values, social justice, and fundamental human rights. And then the freely elective representatives have the duty to heal those divisions of the past. Divisions of the past is inequality. We are still settled with inequality. There are instances of inequality. There are instances of discrimination. There are instances where socio-economic rights have not been achieved by the poor of the poorest and the marginalized people of South Africa.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Now, with the COVID-19 pandemic, there are serious limitations on the Commission in the interest of greater good. And this has placed a spotlight on the role of the state and human rights during the pandemic. So what is your view in terms of the key human rights issues that have emerged during the pandemic? And secondly, the South African Human Rights Commission, their response to the COVID-19 pandemic, has it been enough? And also, are there any lessons learned or that can continuously be learned from this situation?
There are challenges. When the pandemic affected us in South Africa, a solidarity fund was declared. And then there were relief funds that were supposed to be distributed to the length and breadth of the country. But some of the people never received any of those funds through instances of corruption and the like. And as the South African human rights have been on the outlook. And then also another area is the right to education. When the schools were about to be reopened, the Human Rights Commission, we said, the schools that will be opening, we don't want that there should be an inequality to find that those schools that are better off, they are opening, but the schools in the rural areas where there are a lot of challenges, they don't open And then as a result, we held an education in Daba to say they should be tandem. In other words, they should open at the same time. And at the moment, we are saying there is the vaccine. We are going to be alert because the Constitution says we must monitor and assess. We have taken a decision that we will be very, very careful in monitoring the rollout of the vaccine, that each and every people, and those who are willing to be vaccinated, they do get vaccinated.
Thank you, Commissioner. So each commissioner has a focus area. And yes, you are currently a commissioner. So what is your focus area, has been your focus area? And can you give more detail? And how would you, like in future, what other focus areas you would like to consider? And if you could elaborate on that, please. Thank you.
My specific focus area is land. Farming communities, and you can call it the right to food, as well as an environment. And people don't have land. There is an outcry for land. And people were evicted. Some of them submitted their claims before the 31st of December 1998, but most of them have passed on. And then their children have taken over, but even some of the children who have taken over has passed on. And then it's now the second generation that is still battling and struggling with finalizing the land claims that were submitted in the year 1998. And then insofar as the farming communities are concerned, we receive a lot and lot of complaints to say the life is made so unbearable in the sense that they decide to leave the farms and go and stay in informal settlements. Because you find that a person who was plowing, planting and harvesting or grazing cattle, the space is being cut. And then the people there are unable to live, to survive by either keeping cattle or by farming and the like. And it is a cause for concern. And we are looking at the finalization of whether or not Section 25 of the Constitution is amended. And lastly, we also heard that there are bills for expropriation of land without a compensation. We are looking at that. We are expecting you as the freely elected representative to fast track this process so that the people can enjoy this. Because when we educate them on farms and say, we are now free at last, they said, Mr. Sibanyoni, you don't know what you're talking about. On the farms, it's worse than it was in 1994. The life is worse. They are graves because they are using the ancestral graves as proof that they were staying there, are being demolished. And then where they were grazing their land, some of the farmers have planted forest plantation, and some of the farmers have also fenced off the dam. The people that who've got cattle, their cattle don't have access to water and the like. I'm telling you, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
The life of it is bad.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sibanyoni. Thank you very much, Honorable Kretenbach.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Sibanyoni. I would like you to please try and keep this as brief as possible. My first question is, why do you think that the Constitution requires that the Commission be both independent and impartial? And why does it protect the Commission's independence?
Yes, the commission should be independent and impartial so that it have the right to make findings and decisions that will be taken serious by those people who are found to be on the wrong side of the Bill of Rights, the fundamental rights, the basic rights. And then let me just add to say, we talk about the three arms of state. There are some people who are even saying, when you look at South Africa, South Africa is a country sui generis. You have the legislature, parliament, you have the executive, you have the judiciary, but you have the Chapter 9 institutions that also have a role to play. Their role is of significance.
Thank you, sir. And then just briefly tell me, if you're appointed, what legacy would you like to leave?
If I'm appointed, it's a legacy that I would leave, that I wish that it will be a legacy where the life of the people has changed, so that it should not be before, it should not be like before 1994, when we are saying we are now in a democracy or a democratic country. It should be to the benefit of all the people at the length and breadth of the country. People should have access to these rights that are enshrined in the Constitution. The South African Constitution is reputed as the best constitution, but it's not enjoyed by all the people of South Africa. There is a large number of the people who see no benefit or access to this constitution, and those are the poor and the marginalized people.
Thank you, sir. I'm done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bredenbach. Honorable Mola.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Greetings, Commissioner. The first question, does the South African Human Rights Commission have a role to play in promoting social cohesion in the country?
The answer is yes. The South African Human Rights Commission has a big and significant role to play in promoting social and economic rights. And we do it as an internal country. Also, we participate in NANDRI as well as GANDRI, where we play our role insofar as social and economic rights are concerned.
Thank you. The commission has been criticized mostly in the country of not having the tip to execute its mandate, or being dull and doing nothing to promote and protect human rights. Do you think that this comment or this narrative is correct, or is it justified?
I will say the comment is fair. The comment is fair. Why I'm saying that, there are people who do not know what powers and functions the South African Human Rights Commission has. And then also, the South African Human Rights Commission, I think in the past, it was not known to that extent. But after we were appointed as commissioners, we went out to a conference where we said the Human Rights Commission should be vocal and should be visible. We're holding our conference in Magaliesberg. And then I always say that we are regarded as the watchdogs on human rights. And then also the dog, if I can make an analogy, starts by barking, when somebody is encroaching on the land. And then it is only when that person is ignoring the bark that the dog will bite. And the South African Human Rights Commission, for some time, it was, if you use an analogy, it was barking, correcting, calling upon the people, advising them that they are contravening those human rights and the like. But now of late, we have taken a decision, a resolution, that we are going to be more on our strategic protective mandate. In other words, the organs of state are going to be seeing us more and more taking matters to court. The organs of state are going to see more and more of us making those recommendations that we want, that they should be respected. And then and it is only when it can be reviewed by the court of law that those decisions or those recommendations we are going to be making. So I must say, Mr. Ngola, trust me, you will be seeing the change from time going on. We have been there at Val River. We published that damning report. And then we have also been there at Kolobeni. And then the people of Kolobeni who were saying they don't want their ancestral land to be disturbed and the like, because the mining affected communities tell a very sad story, to say that when mines come, they don't respect their SLAs. And then also when they make promises to say they will rehabilitate the area, but after they are done with extracting mineral resources, the place is not brought to a situation where it was before there were mining operations. As I'm talking to you now, I'm in the... Yes.
We are operating within a very short space of time. If you can be precise and brief into your answers. Let's move to another one. What in your view should the Commission do to improve cooperation and coordination with other Chapter 9 institutions and civil society in general? And why do you think that this coordination and cooperation will be of utmost importance?
Thank you, Honorable Ngola. First point, it is in your hands as the organs of state. Kada Asmal report has been submitted to Parliament. As the Human Rights Commission, I will say, will you please look at the recommendations that were made by the Kada Asmal Commission. And then secondly, with regard to the other organs of state, civil society, we've got a good and well working relationship with other civil society, the Foundation for Human Rights, and the organizations like the National Association of Democratic Lawyers. And then we are having a good and well working relationship with them.
Thank you. All right, sir, it's the last one. What is the role of the deputy chairperson in the commission? And do you think that this position or this office is important in the commission?
The role of the deputy chairperson is that when the chairperson is not available, the deputy takes over. And even when the chairperson is present, the deputy chairperson has got a huge role to play, because the amount of the work of the chairperson is so huge that the chairperson is overwhelmed by the number of work that the chairperson has to do. The chairperson has also got, at the current moment, Advocate Bongani Majola, also a focus area on health and the like other commissioners. But at the same time, he's got also another duty to manage the human rights, and then also to lead the South African Human Rights Commission. Therefore, Deputy Chairperson is a helping hand. And with the passing of Priscilla Jana, may her soul rest in peace, there has been a gap that it is being felt in the South African Human Rights Commission. And therefore, I am saying briefly that the Deputy Chairperson has got a big role to play. He's an assistant to the person who is appointed as the chairperson.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Taylor.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Commissioner Sibanyoni. My attack to follow up, because some of the information you have already mentioned, but one thing that I would like to find out from you, what do you think are some of the South Africa's achievements in advancing human rights?
South Africa has been a role model, not only to the African continent, but also it has been a role model even to the countries abroad. It was enabled by its constitution. The constitution that at a go, it was a constitution that had got a chapter on fundamental human rights, the basic human rights. And then also the Chapter 9 institutions, various Chapter 9 institutions have done tremendous amount of work since the advent of democracy.
Thank you. Using your experience, Commissioner, many people or communities, particularly those who are marginalized, still have a problem, still have not fully have access to human rights and awareness. I did understand that you have mentioned some of the work that you have done when it comes to awareness, but I would want to know from you, what are the innovative means would you adopt if taken to promote more of this access and awareness?
We'll utilize more, especially Section 184, Subsection 3D, which says we must educate. And then we have to increase the amount of education that is being done by the South African Human Rights Commission. And we have been writing a pamphlet and distributing them during our outreach programs and the like. And at the present moment, we have said we want to do, and we've already done, a podcast so that those people who are able to play and listen to a podcast, and they will be educated. So the key is education. More and more people need to be educated so that they must know to what extent, when their rights are being violated, they can be assisted. They can access the Human Rights Commission in all provinces, in all 9 provinces.
Thank you. The last one, Chairperson and Commissioner. My last question would be, how would you handle complaints that may be potentially politically sensitive or otherwise controversial, in light of your understanding of the role of the Human Rights Commission?
Right. As long as that complaint deals with human rights, we have to handle them, because the legislation says the Human Rights Commission, to do its work, without fear, favor, or prejudice. And if it's an instance or a transgression that transgresses the rights of people, we won't stand against that. We will handle it like catching a bull with horns. But if it's something that is pure political, and then you as the organs of state will have to deal with political matters. We are given a mandate to do, to be a custodian, to guard insofar as human rights are concerned.
Thank you, Chairperson. That was my last one.
Thank you very much, Honorable Msane.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings, Commissioner. With the legacy you want to leave in mind, what innovations would you wish to introduce in the human rights space if you are appointed commissioner? And how do you plan on bringing knowledge and interest of South African youth in the human rights space?
Thank you very much. The innovation that I will do if I'm appointed is to say the Human Rights Commission should be more vigorous in executing its mandate. And the Human Rights Commission should not hesitate to take drastic legal steps if there are some ignorance or ignoring of their resolutions and the like. And the legacy that I would like to leave is a legacy that when people look at the back, look at the work that I've done, there must be something visible that they will remember, that one time there was Commissioner J.B. Sibanyoni, and then talking about the issue of the land, I would like to see that some of the people were evicted from their ancestral places. They do get a restoration of land, because we are to restore the dignity. A person without land is a person without dignity. And also, I must say that there should be transformation, as we are saying, because we are there to transform the society. That is the legacy that I am intending to leave.
Krishna, if you are appointed, you will need to lead others. How would you describe your leadership style, as you have already explained that currently you are mostly dealing with land, and you might know that that space requires quite a radical leadership, type of leadership style. So how would you describe your leadership style, and can you provide us with an example of when you have successfully led, and what has that successful leadership benefited to the ordinary South African?
Well, my leadership style is that I believe in democratic centralism. I believe that when you are in a leadership position, you should take along the people who are with you. Throughout my past experience, I have been in leading positions. I will not count them, but I have realized that in order to be a good leader, you should also have listening skills. You should also be able to listen to the people whose views are different than those that you have, and so that at the end of the day, you win their hearts and minds, so that they should understand why you think in a particular way. And then if that is done, it will be to the benefit of that position that you are occupying. But sometimes you've got to put your foot down when you feel that you have considered all the corners, you have considered all the blind spots, and you see that this is the correct direction that has to be taken.
Honorable Msana, can you unmute yourself?
Can you give us an example of where you have successfully led with that democratic centralism type of leadership, maybe a program that was successful?
Well, I have led when we were making a comment on the implementation of Section 25. There were various views at the Human Rights Commission, and there was some delay, but at the end of the day, I said, as the Human Rights Commission, our voice needs to be heard. And also with the current or the recent bill, the expropriation of land without compensation, I also said that although there are divergent views, but at the long last, we should submit a presentation by the Human Rights Commission. And lastly, the UNISA matter. And when the decision was made that there should be a capping of the taking of students, that will exclude 20,000 first-year students. We debated that very strongly. And I have said, as the Human Rights Commission, for the sake of the right to education, we've got to make an application for amicus curiae. And I deposed to that affidavit. And then I was saying I'm prepared to put my neck on the block. Why I'm saying put my neck on the block? Because there were some fears that if the application is not successful, we may be settled with an order for cost that as the Human Rights Commission should be paying. But I think in fairness, the judiciary should realize our role as the South African Human Rights Commission to say, in the event a magistrate's decision is overturned, the magistrate is not ordered to pay cost. Even if a single judge makes a judgment that is found to be incorrect, it has never been heard. It is unusual that judge will be ordered to pay cost out of his or her own cost. Another one where I was adamant is a New England Road landfill, the dumping field at Msunduzi in KZN, where that dumping field was causing havoc to the area in Msunduzi.
Can you run that?
Thank you, Babu Sibanyoni. Which supporting skills do you think are most important when it comes to effective leadership of an organization such as the South African Human Rights Council? With just that little time that I have, Commissioner.
Supporting skills, constantly training.
Can you repeat your answer?
I should think constant training, and then as well as also maybe from time to time team building, so that you ensure that everybody is putting his or her shoulder on the deck.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm done.
Thank you very much, Honorable Msane. Honorable Janja.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Sibanyoni, I've been given 8 minutes for this exercise. I'm very jealous about that time. I take charge of it. I want you to take charge of the content in these 8 minutes. My first question is, what section of the Constitution deals with the appointment of commissioners?
the section that deals with the appointment of commissioners.
Exactly.
It's section one.
Let me assist you before you read it. Let me assist you. It's section 193 that deals with that.
Yes.
Help me then further. Subsection one of that says the public protector and members of the commission must be women or men who are fit and proper. The first point I want you to help us with, why does it emphasize women or men and doesn't say a person? Why women or men? Why that emphasis?
That emphasis, even throughout the legislation, it says that it starts with women or men, is to redress the imbalance between gender. Because when you look at the history of South Africa, you find that women were marginalized.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's proceed. The next point. What is your understanding of fit and proper as it is raised in subsection B of subsection 1? A fit and proper person.
A fit and proper person, I understand that it should be a person that will be able to can perform the particular work for that position that the person is appointed, and also have the necessary skills to do the work properly and successfully.
As I go further, I want us to connect even with our eyes, because I want you to look at me as I'm asking these questions. I don't know what's disturbing you there below you. Is Mr. Sibanyoni a fit and proper candidate here for this position?
Yes, through you, Chairperson, I want to say I'm a fit and proper person for this position. I've been a part-time commissioner since 2017, and when I look back, I am proud of the contribution that I have made. And then looking forward, I am saying if I'm appointed as a full-time commissioner, I will be in a position to make more contribution to the South African Human Rights Commission.
Thank you. Is the South African Human Rights Commission successful in executing its mandate?
The answer is yes. It
Why?
Is
good. Why? Elaborate.
I can elaborate to say there are cases where the South African Human Rights Commission has made decisions, and then the Human Rights Commission has made some subpoena hearings and made findings, and then most of the people have complied with those findings where the South African Human Rights Commission has convened those hearings and come up with the findings. And then broadly, the South African Human Rights Commission has made a mark in the world of human rights in South Africa.
Okay. My next point, I would want you to be very specific here, because you're not just an applicant, you are already a commissioner. I want you to help this panel and tell us, in your own view, based on your own experience, having been there, what are one or two areas of focus that require improvement in the South African Human Rights Commission? I want you to be very practical here.
Do away with part-time commissioners. Make them all full-time commissioners. We need hands to execute the mandate that we've been given. Give us more money. Talk to National Treasurer. We want to reach the length and breadth of our country. But because of the cutting of the budget, there are some areas which we want to reach, but unable to do that.
You need more money when the economy has come to a stop, when we're looking for, the treasurer does not have money. How would you, in the context of a new normal with less resources, execute what you you want to execute. We want you to be very creative here.
I will be creative to say maybe...
There's no hole full of money. You know that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Maybe to be creative, Mr. Daichi, through your chairperson, maybe give us a green light, say, Human Rights Commission, go ahead, do fundraising on condition that you are careful that there are no strings attached to the...
Okay, let's proceed. My last point, Chair. Can you share with this panel? Now I'm asking Mr. Sibanyoni, can you share with this panel your own previous experience on handling complaints in the context of the Human Rights Commission? And I would like you to be specific. I'm wanting us to go beyond general, because you're in that space already.
I handled the complaints of Ekolobeni. I was there in the wild coast of the eastern province, and it concerns the mining affected communities, and there was a complaint to say Bazuka Khatebe was assassinated, and then no one has been arrested insofar as that is concerned. And then we have taken measures, which I won't disclose here, to say that we are calling upon the Minister of Police to address those. And then other mining-affected communities, Umama Figile Njangase, who was murdered because she was refusing to sign an agreement, and has taken a matter to the court. And then we have been calling upon the Minister of Police. Unfortunately, up to now, we have not found a suitable alternative there.
We can pause there. Thank you very much, Mr. Sibanyoni. Thank you, Chair. I pause there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Just one question, two questions, Mr. Sibanyoni. Do you believe in gender equality?
Yes, Chairperson, I do believe in gender equality. And throughout my career, I have championing the rights of women. And I did that when I was working for an organization called Nepila. And I used to stand in the town and dish out pamphlets encouraging people to accept that misogynity is time of the past. And I was even accused to say that I am influencing women to not respect or to obedient to their husband and the like. And I've also believed in it. I've worked as an HOD under a directorship of a lady. I was accepting the lady as my leader. And then, to me, I don't undermine women.
No, thank you very much. Now, in a commission where there is only one woman, why must we appoint you as a man? Out of a commission of 8 people, there's only one woman. Why do you think this committee must appoint you or recommend that you must be appointed being a man?
Chairperson, maybe I accepted this to be appointed a full-time commissioner, not specifically looking at a vacancy that was left by Commissioner Christina Jana, but to say I feel I've got power as long as there is still breath in my body to make a more contribution if I'm appointed as a full-time commissioner. And then if that is successful, there will be a position that maybe will be left after I'm being converted, because the legislation, yes, does say that if there is a vacancy, an outstanding term of a part-time commissioner may be converted to a full-time commissioner.
but you do accept that there's only one woman in that commission.
Currently, yes.
And there are,
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yes, there's only one woman in that commission and the rest is men.
I agree, Chairperson, 100%, but also to add to say, I don't know what will be the decision of the portfolio committee. If the portfolio committee changes my part-time status to be full-time status, then another opening occurs, then a woman can be brought in. In other words, it doesn't change the numbers. I'm not coming from outside. I'm not a person coming from outside. I'm already in the South African Human Rights Commission.
Thank you very much, Mr. Do you think the questions were fair? Are you happy with how the interview has gone?
Yes, I think the questions were fair, Chairperson. Maybe I must be apologetic if I was being verbatim or too long in answering questions, but I was trying to make it clear. The questions were fair. I'm not having any problem whatsoever.
So the interview was fair?
It was fair, Chairperson and fellow honourable members.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Sibanyoni. As you know, that you are one of the people who will be delaying us because you have not yet submitted your fingerprints. We would have loved that by the time we go to on recess, we should have finished this matter. But as soon as you submit your fingerprints, they must be sent for screening. Then it is only then that we will be able to process the matter. So you not submitting the fingerprints on time is going to delay us, and we think that the commission needs all the helping hand that it can have, and so any delay is not taken kindly.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will, after this interview, go to the nearest police station here in Welkom, in the Free State, and have my fingerprints taken, and I will immediately send them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sibanyoni. Thank you for availing yourself. As soon as the decision is made, you would be advised accordingly.
Thank you very much once more, Chairperson. Thank you very much to honourable members.
Thank you very much. Who is the next candidate?